Hello, everybody. This is Marshall Poe. I'm the founder and editor of the New Books Network. I've published several academic books, and one of the things I found frustrating is my inability to get them picked up in the press. There really is no PR service specifically oriented toward academic books. Recently, however, I had the opportunity to work with a PR firm in New York, RLM, on a book that I recently published. And I have to say, they did a remarkable job at a very low price. And this got me thinking. I wonder if the New Books Network and RLM could provide a service that would promote academic books. So the folks at RLM and I put our heads together and we came up with a package. It is specifically targeted toward people like you, people who write academic books. So if you're interested, you should go to the NBN website and click publish. Publicize your book, and there you'll find some information about the services that the NBN and RLM are offering. What we really want to do is provide you with value for money. As far as we know, no such service exists. This is the first of its kind, and we really hope it is successful, and we hope that it helps you get the word out about your academic book.
Welcome to the New Books Network.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of Self-Control Through Torah. I'm David Gottlieb, a historian of Judaism and an adjunct member of the Faculty in Jewish Studies at the Spertus Institute for Jewish Learning and Leadership in Chicago.
And I'm Modia Silva in Toronto, Canada, and I'm a psychotherapist and an author.
I love, Modia, how you felt like you had to say Canada, like we wouldn't know.
I know, you say that a lot, but
it's like Toronto, Canada, you American dummies. That's what it sounds like to me.
Well, maybe to soften it a little bit, this is a podcast that goes around the world. And so there could be in far-flung places who don't know where Toronto is.
Right. Yeah. And they could say, did he mean Toronto, Ohio? Or Toronto, Delaware? But in any case, Modia, it's a continuing joy to do this podcast with you. And for those of you who may not have listened before or haven't listened in a while, I just want to briefly remind you of what we do here. So we are using Rabbi Menachem Mendel Lefin's Cheshbon HaNefesh, a guide to self-improvement and character refinement, and the character traits there listed and explained, to go through each and every one of the parshiot of the Torah. We follow the calendar of Torah portions, moving week by week to a new Torah portion, but we stay on one midah or character trait for 4 weeks at a time. This week, we begin consideration of the character trait of tzedek, or righteousness, and we are on Parshat Tzav, in the book of Leviticus. And Modia, I'm just going to start off by saying the whole book of Leviticus is, you know, the modern sensibility really has to go through some gymnastics for much of the book to apply the detailed rules, prescriptions, and proscriptions for priestly service to our current sort of postmodern everyday lives. And then you layer onto that the Midah of righteousness, and we have a challenge on our hands this week. How do the laws of sacrifice, as painstakingly outlined in this parsha, illuminate what we should do to improve our work in the realm of righteousness?
Yeah.
Got an answer for me?
Well, the answer is that you may not, I mean, it's an answer that you may not like, because I think it is going to be a challenge for us maybe this next 4 weeks, that I think when you and I and others have worked on our midot, worked on character development, that one of the main practices is to choose 13 character traits.
Right.
Right. And we get to choose the 13 that are the most meaningful. Maybe we pick easy ones, but we get to pick them. And we have set ourselves a big challenge by using Rabbi Lefin's list of 13. And then we've, as you've noted, we've made an even bigger challenge by having to look at the weekly Parsha through the lens of Rabbi Lefin's character traits. So I think it is going to be tough. What gives me a bit of solace is Rabbi Jonathan Sacks, Zichron Livracha, says that the book of Vayikra is written in the priestly voice, that he talks about three voices that make up the Torah. And not that different people wrote the Torah, but just there are three prime literary voices. One is the priestly voice, one is the prophetic voice, and the third is the wisdom voice. And that Vayikra is written in the priestly voice, meaning not that it was written by or for priests, but that it has priestly sensibility. And so for me, when I look at the Parsha then, as we'll dive into it a little bit, I say, okay, that is priestly sensibility. I'm not a priest. I'm Yisrael. I'm not Cohen or Levi. I'm just Yisrael, the proletariat. How do I take that voice and translate it into my own personal voice? I think that's what you're asking, right?
Yeah. But I have two things I want to say about that. One is that underlying our whole project of trying to go through the Torah portions and then overlaying the midot that Rabbi Leffen has outlined in the order that he's outlined them, by doing that, we're setting ourselves the challenge and making the presumption that in any Torah portion, you can find a lesson about any midah or all midot, that Torah, all of Torah contains all of Torah, right?
Yeah.
And that as a result, some weeks it may be less evident or less easy to find the ethical message, but it's always there. That's one thing. The second thing I wanted to say is that we tend to look at ethical challenges as purely mental or spiritual. And Leviticus comes to show us that they are very physical, that they are embodied, that there are physical things that we have to do and take up in a disciplined way in order to improve our connection to this midah. Indeed, any midah, you have to do things in the world and you have to use your body to do them if you're going to elevate yourself. Ironically, we are given this physical body and with all its flaws and imperfections that carries around its own waste inside of it to carry out holy missions. And that means that despite its severe limitations, we're made B'Tselem Elohim, and that means that we can do this. We're not given anything that we can't do. Now, to me, one of the main lessons comes right at the beginning of Parshat Tzav, which begins in Leviticus 6:1. And when we look at verse, hold on just a second. So let's, for example, look at verse 2. And verse 2 says, okay, so it says at the very beginning, 6:1, Vayidaber Hashem el Moshe lemor, tzav et Aharon ve'et banav lemor. God spoke to Moses saying, command Aaron and his sons thus. Then he says, this is the ritual of the burnt offering. Zot Torah ha'ola hi ha'ola al mukda al hamizbeach kol halayla ad haboker ve'esh hamizbeach tukad bo, which is, this last part is often translated as the fire on the altar has to be kept going on it, meaning on the altar. But it also can mean that the fire has to be kept burning in him. Bo can mean on it, can mean in him. All of sacrifice is a corollary for how we use our bodies to work in the world. These external actions are mirrors and magnifiers of our ethical actions. And we must keep the fire of Dvekut burning all the time. That's the Hasidic view. The more yogic view is that the fire that's burning in us all the time is the witness consciousness, that element in us that we work on in meditation, that observes all that goes on, but that it is not addicted to thoughts the way our brain is. Putting these things two together, what I see is that our ethical actions have to be embodied and hooked to our witness consciousness, that part of us that observes and simply exists as a consciousness in the world. If the ultimate internal fire is hooked to the external fire, then we will act righteously in the world. I'll stop there.
Wow. Why stop there? That was brilliant. That was...
Because I'm exhausted. Because I'm exhausted.
That was really wonderful. Because I agree with you that about the internal and the external, and about how we get hooked into thought, and that really pulling back to be a witness to our thinking is a path to being an ascetic, is a path to being righteous. I want to bring in, based on what you're saying, the commentary from Rashi on that second verse, when it says, Tzav et Aharon vet banav, command Aaron and his sons. And Rashi says that the term tzav denotes only encouragement. So it's interesting when I think about, are you commanding me to do this? Or are you encouraging me to do this? And either way, whichever way I take that word, I can easily get trapped into an emotional response. And you're commanding me? There's no way I'm going to do it. Don't you command me, right? Or you're encouraging me? Oh, thank you so much. Like for seeing me and not being so harsh. And right, either way, my emotions have a good, strong chance of taking over and dictating to me how I'm going to respond to that.
Yes.
And what you're suggesting is, if I want to be a tzaddik, if I want to develop the trait of tzedek, of righteousness, I need to pull back and see that the place of my emotions and the place of my thinking, and be a witness to both of those, not just, actually all three, because you're talking about embodiment. So can I be a witness to my thoughts, to my emotions, and to my body sensations?
Absolutely. And being a witness means not being tied up in, not being addicted to, not being overly identified with the stories that we tell ourselves.
Right. Can I just jump in?
Please.
Yeah.
No, go ahead.
Well, it's interesting because Rabbi Leffin, at the beginning of his short definition or explanation of this character trait of righteousness, talks about the two souls that we have, which you and I know is spoken about a lot in Kabbalah and in the Tanya, in the Chabad Sefer, the Tanya. And he talks about the animal soul and the divine soul. And he talks about how the animal soul is all about self-adoration. It looks for self-satisfaction, right? And so when we have that focus, we're not going to develop our character trait of tzedek.
So then how is Rabbi Leffen, like, he says he's very elliptical, I think, on the matter of righteousness, but he does seem to suggest that there is a premium put on action, right?
Mm-hmm.
And yet the Olah offering, if I'm reading it rightly, The Olah offering is really about thoughts. The Olah offering, let me see if I can find where I saw this. I know where it was. So this is commentary on the Olah offering based on the thought of Rashi. The Olah has to burn all night, because it is precisely in the absence of natural light that immoral thoughts take center stage. In other words, this is about purging, bringing light to the darkness of our thoughts. And yet, another interesting fact about the Olah is that, you know, the Kohanim couldn't just get up in their bathrobes and sweep the ashes off the altar. They had to be dressed in the finery of the Kohanim, in the priestly garments. And so Terumat HaDeshen, the sweeping of the ashes, is on one level looks like sort of janitorial work, but you're doing it in your finest, you're doing custodial work in your finest clothes. There's something super important about that. two things, one from the yogic perspective and one from the ethical perspective. From the yogic perspective, the burning of our light of consciousness inside this body produces waste, and it has to be swept away from the altar, right? We constantly have to be aware enough to sweep the ashes of our living off the altar of our consciousness. From an ethical perspective, we have to be dressed in our best when we do it. We right. don't get up in our bathrobe and sweep the ashes. We have to realize that this is sacred and elevated work, that the ashes themselves are important, and that in fact we are making room for the Shekhinah by getting rid of the ashes, but the ashes must be there. The process must be burning in order for us to make that space. If we do that, then we make space for the Shekhinah. To the extent we're doing that, the Holy Presence, if we're making space for the Holy Presence, we are drawing ourselves into righteousness. We don't have to hold up a yardstick. We don't have to say, I'm 100% righteous. Nobody's better than me. We don't have to talk down to ourselves and say, I'm a schmuck. We just do the work.
Yeah, it makes me think about, Sur Me Ra Va'ase Tov, that thing that disconnects me from the divine and relationships, and Ase Tov, to do the good, which is to do the good that reconnects me. So avoid the bad, perform loving kindness, and it's all about interpersonal relationships. But what you just said, I think, is really important, because, you know, Jung would talk a lot about the shadow self or the shadow side, right?
Yes, right.
And I think the ashes, you're suggesting about the ashes, is we have to recognize that we have a shadow side, and it is part of us. And at the same time, we have to be wise in dealing with it, that every time that pile of ashes grew so high, that's when they would brush it off and take it outside and get rid of it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But they had to do it. And so I want to say that the linen, the clothing that they had to wear, and they had to change. So the ashes were a result of the burning, of the sacrifice.
Yes, right.
It was the end of the process, not the beginning of another process. And at the end of the process, they had to put those special clothes on, which were made of linen, right? And then they had to change again. So they only wore those special clothes just for taking out the trash, basically.
Correct.
Right? So I was thinking, why linen? Why was it so important to tell us that it's linen? And then I was thinking about shatness, about the mix, not mixing mm-hmm. linen and wool, mm-hmm. that mm-hmm. one, that linen comes from a plant and wool comes from an animal. And maybe what it's telling us is that as we work to avoid the bad and move to loving kindness, that we should not do it. We should recognize we don't want to bring our animal instinct along with us.
Wow. That's really good. And that goes with what you pointed out early on about what Rabbi Leffen is saying, that the challenge is the integration, but also the separation of the animal instinct and the higher instincts to which we, you know, to which we're called by the Midah of righteousness. I want to bring in something of Rabbi Isaac Abravanel, and this is from The Heart of Torah, the two-volume collection of commentaries on the weekly Parsha by Rabbi Shai Held. He brings an explanation from Rabbi Isaac Abravanel on the question of why does the Torah find the prospect of leftovers disturbing? And Abravanel, the 15th and 16th century sage, says that the Torah's purpose is to publicize the miracle the person is celebrating. The fact that a great deal of food must be consumed in a short time leads the thankful person to invite relatives, friends, and acquaintances to partake of the food. This is specifically with regard to the Thanksgiving office offering. So since there can be no leftovers, you have the opportunity to share the Thanksgiving offering and the thankfulness for the miracles that made this food possible. But Rabbi Held says, another way of thinking about it is that gratitude is inherently outward looking, not inward looking. If you think about a time when you were grateful, you may notice that when you fully inhabit the sense of gratitude, you want to share the gifts that you've received. So something about the of the Thanksgiving offering has an intensely communal aspect. Not only are you thankful for the miracles that is that have been brought to you in your entire community, but that you are bidden to share them. And sharing bounty is fundamental to righteousness.
Wow. I think that's a great, I love that takeaway. I love that. That is back to interpersonal relationships, that tzedek, because tzedek is also about justice, which is yes. also about an outward looking at what is right for everybody.
Yeah.
It's interesting, back to Rabbi Leffin's writing about this, when he says that tzedek is really about being commended to do good for all. And in addition, we have to watch out to be embarrassed that if we find people who really have need, we should be embarrassed that they exist even, because wow. no one should be in need.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And if I can have that sensitivity to my friends, my relatives, and the strangers, then that's a path to become a tzaddik or develop tzedek.
And that is partly why at the very end of his commentary, Rabbi Leffin ties tzedek to loving kindness. The very last word of one of the very last words of his very brief commentary on tzedek is chesed. He says, this obligation, meaning the obligation to avoid robbery, theft, taking advantage, cheating, jealousy, hatred, or informing, includes the positive precept of performing acts of loving kindness. So you're not only refraining from doing certain things, you're moving toward doing other things out of genuine love. And then, so Moja, this makes me want to ask, as we do every week, so now that we've thought about this, what do we do? What is our homework? What does this mean we have to go out and do? What should you and I focus on this next week, since we're going to be talking about tzedek again next week? What do we do?
Well,
you're always good at the homework. I'm assigning you us the homework.
Well, I appreciate that. However, can I just say that I just breathed in and it just felt fast, because I'm struggling with this meter. This is a really hard meter for me for some reason. And so I wanted, if it's okay, before we get to homework, I want to pull back and sort of figure out what all the components are. And going back to Rabbi Leffin's, he ties emunah, he ties trustworthiness to tzedek. So emunah, we might translate as faith.
Yeah.
But there's an aspect that actually the L.A. Shur also focuses on this. He says that emunah really is being ne'eman, which is being trustworthy. And so...
faithful, right?
Faithful. Yeah, faithful. Mm-hmm. Right. Dependable and trustworthy.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Right. And so there's an aspect of emunah that is part of tzedek, of righteousness. There's an aspect of loving kindness, chesed, that you just talked about. And then Chavakuk also talks about trustworthiness. He says that all the precepts in the Torah can be condensed into one, that the righteous, the person who is tzedek, lives because of their trustworthiness. So we can build some homework then, I guess, around emunah, around being dependable, reliable, maybe, and also being trustworthy. Oh, sorry, that's the same thing. Around loving kindness.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So maybe we start to approach tzedek through loving kindness and through trustworthiness or dependability. What do you think?
So I really like that idea. I paused for a moment because I was thinking about something that happened to my wife and me several months ago on the streets of Chicago. One of the major streets near our house is lined with Venezuelan immigrants who have signs about the difficult journey they've made and who are sitting on the street and asking for money and food because they have none of either. And one day we have paused and talked to some of these people and given them money. But one day we came around the corner and came upon a very young Venezuelan family, a young couple in their 20s and their small boy. And the woman was wolfing down a sandwich. And my wife and I speak enough Spanish so that we said, "Hi, is everything okay?" And she said, "Well, I'm sorry, I'm wolfing this down. I haven't had any food in 24 hours. We just got here." And my wife's heart just exploded with compassion and loving kindness. And she looked at us and looked at me and said, "We have to do something. We have to do more." And we've developed a relationship with this young family and their little boy. We've helped them a number of times. We've bought them food and clothing. We've stayed in touch with them. We've taken them out for meals, Venezuelan food, which they miss terribly. And we're trying to stay in touch and find out different ways to help. And it's not always easy because they've moved a couple of times. Their cell phone service has been turned off because they don't have any money to pay it. And then anyway, long story short, like there was a burst of compassion and loving kindness my wife had more than me. She just, something overflowed in her when she saw this particular couple. And there has to be something along those lines that you and I can do, like of letting our hearts open to someone in difficulty and doing more than we would customarily do.
Yes. So I love that. And as a caution, because you and I have studied Musar for years, sometimes our hearts don't spring open. And Musar is all about Na'aseh Nishma, like do it and do it, like fake it till you make it.
Absolutely.
It until your heart springs open.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I also had, this morning I was leaving shul, and I saw one of my friends who is working with veterans. There are 10 or 12 Jewish veterans living in a particular facility, veterans of the Second World War.
Mm-hmm.
And before COVID, he used to help organize Passover Seders for these veterans. And then now this is the first year post-COVID that he's going to do it again. He's going to help.
Uh-huh.
And I was thinking, okay, like how much is it going to cost? Because you need money, and I'll just e-transfer you some money. And then I walked to my car and I was like, oh, look at me. Look how good I'm going to be doing this.
Right, right.
And that's the animal soul again, looking for self-satisfaction.
Yeah.
So I get that giving and helping others is hard to be completely altruistic, but I think that's the challenge of becoming a tzaddik, right? Is how do we move to be closer and closer to the way your wife reacted? And I like your idea of it's got to be more than we normally do.
And I think it has to be relational, like you pointed out. It's so easy to, you know, e-transfer money. But part of what these sacrifices require us to do is enter into relationship with God, enter into relationship with the priests who are conducting the sacrifices, enter into relationship with the people with whom we share the Thanksgiving offering, doing the physical work of cleaning the ashes. So it has, and, you know, there's all sorts of research right now showing that we are atrophying spiritually and emotionally because we are having less contact, real time, in-person contact with people than ever before. We are born and bred and genetically engineered to benefit from contact.
Okay, so I have a thought.
Yeah.
Based on your Venezuelan family, I don't know if I've shared this story before, but I heard it, and I hope I don't butcher it, and I think I got the right rabbi's name, so bear with me. But this young yeshiva boy in Jerusalem got married, and he was at home in his apartment with his wife. And the wife said to him, you know, it's garbage day in a couple of days. Would you mind taking out the garbage? And he said, are you kidding me? He says, you know what yeshiva I'm studying at? And she's like, yes. And you know who my mashgiach, like my spiritual director is, right? Rabbi Lopian. She's like, yes. So you think I should be taking out the garbage? Like I'm working to become a Rosh Yeshiva, like the head of a yeshiva. And she's like, I'm so sorry. I clearly insulted you and I'm really sorry. But would you mind asking Rabbi Lopian tomorrow this question? And so he goes to yeshiva the next day and asks Rabbi Lopian, tells him the whole story. And Rabbi Lopian is like, you definitely should not be taking out the garbage. And so he goes home and says, I talked to him. He says, I shouldn't take out the garbage. And she's like, I knew it. I'm so sorry. The next morning, they hear clattering outside their apartment. And they open the door. He opens the door and he sees Rabbi Lopian is taking out the garbage. And he's like, Rabbi, it's like, what are you doing? He's like, I'm taking out your garbage. And he's like, but you told me that I shouldn't be doing that because of who I'm trying to be. And he's like, yeah, you're not at a high enough level yet to take out the garbage.
Wow. Love that.
So that makes me think that we have to help someone, not just, we have to help someone. We have to get dirty. We have to take out the ashes. Just like the Cohen did, right?
Right.
We have to find something that isn't just, oh yeah, sure, I'll just transfer $100 for you.
Yeah, yeah.
It's got to be something where I feel like, yeah, this is a godly task,
mm-hmm.
and it's like taking out the ashes. Something like it. Maybe it's take. I have a neighbor who is immobile down the street, and maybe it is dragging her garbage cans out.
Yeah, yeah. We don't know what it is.
Right.
We don't have to, well, I would suggest that we don't have to decide what it is right now, but mm-hmm. we know that we have to find that something, and then we'll come back and talk about that something.
Beautiful.
Okay.
Lovely. I like it.
Okay. Well, I'm exhausted. I don't know about you.
I'm excited. I still think this is going to be a challenge for the next 3+ weeks.
It is. It is. But these are the practice points that you know are fertile when it doesn't strike you as something that's easy, self-evident, or abundantly clear.
Yeah.
So I think with that, we'll call this episode to a close. Thank you so much to our listeners for joining us for another episode of Self-Control Through Torah. Today, we've been talking about Parshat Tzav in the book of Leviticus, Vayikra, and looking at it in the context of the character trait, the Midah of righteousness. Thanks again for joining us. I'm David Gottlieb.
And I am Modia Silva. Thanks a lot.
Bye.